Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Friends, we welcome you in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Thank you very much for joining me again for another week of hard-hitting boxing news. We're getting ready for the middle of March. If you take a look at the April boxing schedule, it's absolutely loaded. There's about a six-week stretch from April to, I would say, eight-week stretch. April and May, absolutely loaded. From jam-packed, from Canelo fighting Bivol to, you know, Fury versus Dillian White to Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor, Shakur Stevenson versus Oscar Valdez. You know, fights are being added to the schedule left and right. For these April and May, it's going to be absolutely loaded. We have a great show planned for you today. Claudia Trejos of DAZN and so many other great platforms. A woman's trailblazer as we just celebrated International Women's Day. That's not just enough sometimes. We need to celebrate women in sports all the time. Claudia is a good friend of mine, and she's been in the game for a very, very long time. I'm not trying to age Claudia. She'll probably get upset for me saying that, but she is a trailblazer, someone that the first woman to cover Olympic boxing, first woman to cover a fight in Saudi Arabia. So many firsts for her. She was there in attendance for Chocolatito's, I would say, destruction or controlled chaos against JC Martinez, as Chocolatito does it again. He'll be the focal point of my conversation with Claudia. As well as like the fight venues that we saw this past weekend, whether it was Friday night with Jose Ramirez's win over Jose Pedraza in Fresno, which was a raucous crowd. Saturday night, that crowd in San Diego, I don't know about you guys at home, I felt it through the TV. I felt the energy. It helps having Canelo in attendance. It helps having Chocolatito. It helps having Mauricio Lara. That fight, that co-main event was 9 minutes of straight carnage. But let's get these fights out of casinos. Yes, they are important, casinos and Vegas and all that. Get these fights into these markets where the fans are hungry for boxing, and that's San Diego, a fight town that I love. I was there this past summer. So all things Chocolatito, not all things, but most things Chocolatito with Claudia Trejos. We'll touch on some other topics as well. But, man, did he turn back the hands of time again, Roman Gonzalez? Didn't think he'd there were some out there that thought he'd have his hands full with JC Martinez, who proved to be strong, brave, didn't really exactly have a good game plan, came in overweight, came in with, he had a plan A. His plan A was, I'm going to hit Chocolatito a lot, early and often, and I'm going to hit him hard, see how he deals with it. And those first couple of rounds, I thought Martinez looked good. I was like, oh man, Chocolatito's in for a tough fight. And then he just either ran out of steam. He might have broken his hand, Martinez, injured his hand. And then Chocolatito just turned it on, threw 1,076 punches, which is actually his lowest total since the first Estrada fight in 2012, but was able to ramp up the accuracy. 51% power punches landed for Chocolatito. Could this be a new, less or more selective Chocolatito at 1,000 punches, which is absurd? But what's next for him? Superfly division, red hot. Almost every division in boxing right now is red hot. And that's because we have four platforms putting on fights almost every weekend. So you're seeing more fights than ever now. I'm not saying they're the best fights, but for the most part, they are good fights. But we're seeing a lot of fights. This is a golden era of fans watching fights, being able to get access to streams, fights, fight cards all across the world. And speaking of weight classes, I want to do something here for our first segment of the show. And it's the 140-pound division. Obviously, we saw what happened 2 weeks ago when Josh Taylor won a decision over Jack Catterall. And if you're listening, I just did air quotes around one. I thought Jack Catterall won. It is now going from the British board to the government over in the UK. A little dramatic. They're not going to overturn that fight. But I want to take a look at the 140-pound division, because this past weekend we saw Jose Ramirez defeat Jose Pedraza in a somewhat close fight. But I'm gonna rank the top eight. And the reason I'm doing top eight is because I'm also going to do a bracket. I'm also going to do a mythical tournament here on Inside Boxing Live. But I'm going to take Josh Taylor out of this top eight because he says he's moving up. He's talking about catch weights. He's talking about fighting guys at 148. He's all over the place right now, but I think his days at 140 are over unless proven otherwise. I'm going to take him for his word. I'm also going to add Teofimo to this list for entertainment purposes because I do think his next fight will be at 140. So without further ado, I'm going to rank the top eight junior welterweights. And with number eight, we start with Arnold Barboza, 26-0, signed with Top Rank. His last fight was unanimous decision win over Antonio Moran over on August 14th. Does not have a fight on the schedule, but is talking a lot of trash, and he is pointing it at Teofimo Lopez. That's a fight that can be made at 140 in the Top Rank stable. Don't think he gets Teofimo off the bat. I don't think Teofimo is going to take that type of fight in his first fight at 140. Maybe not, but just a guessing man, me here. I don't have any insider info here. I don't see Barboza fighting Teofimo next, but he's a very good fighter, active fighter. Throws 78 punches a round, 35 jabs per round, lands 40% of his power. I got Arnold Barboza at number eight. Coming in number seven, I'm basing this off of projection a little bit. I'm basing this off of where I see this guy in maybe a year or two, maybe even less in the division. That's Gary Antoine Russell, 14-0, 14 knockouts. His last win was his best win when he beat Victor Postal. Obviously, there was a stoppage late with about 30 seconds to go in the 10th and final round. Easily could have went to the cards, but that kept his KO streak alive. He's one of maybe four or five guys or top guys in boxing right now that have a perfect record, perfect KO percentage. Better Biev, Virgil Ortiz, Gary Antoine Russell. I'm sure I'm missing some other guys. But 65 punches around. You know, really depends on the power shots, Gary Russell. 17 of 20. 17 of his 20 landed punches per round are power shots. There's a lot of things really sound in there. But the thing with the Russell, he shares a name with his brother, and his brother fought once a year, famously. I want to see more active. I think Gary Antoine Russell is going to be a lot more active than his brother, and that's not saying much. But I got Antoine Russell at number seven, a guy that I think is going to be a future world champion and might be the most talented of all these guys, and that's saying a lot. Coming in at number six is a wild card of the division, Subriel Matias. This guy is a stud, 18-1, 18 knockouts, really, really heavy hands. His last fight was a TKO 9 over Petros Anian, and that was his only loss. He avenged that loss to Anian by knocking him out or stopping him inside of 10 rounds. Matias could easily be, you know, one or two if you want to go off just like punching power and just like raw ability. But we want to see him in there with tougher talent. We want to see him in there with some of the top names at 140. Maybe we do see that. Who knows? But doesn't have a fight date scheduled. You know, his last fight came in January, so expect to see him. And with the way it goes these days, I don't know, 6-7 months from now. But he lands 27 of 80. He throws a lot of punches, 87 punches around. That's a lot. Coming in at number five. And I said I'm putting him in this list for entertainment purposes and because I think he's going to be in the division for his next fight. Teofimo Lopez coming in at number five, 16-1, 12 knockouts. His last fight, of course, was when he lost to George Kambosos, lost all his belts at 135. His best win is Vasily Lomachenko. Lands 45% of his power shots at lightweight. He's very accurate, very economical, too. That's the thing with Teofimo is he doesn't throw a lot of punches. Throws under 50 punches around, but he is very, very sharp with the power shots. Doesn't have much of a jab. You saw that against Kambosos. So it was his undoing in that fight. He couldn't box. He just going to brawl. But I think at 140, he can be a player. I think he can rule a division there, too, just like he did it at 135. But there's so many ifs. You know, if he gets his mind right, because you see on social media, he's all over the place. If he gets his personal life right, from stuff I'm hearing, not good. If he gets his trainer situation settled, whether it's going to still be his dad, there's rumors of him going with Eddie Reynoso. A lot of ifs with Teofimo. There's no doubt that when he's right, he is one of the best fighters in all of boxing. Coming in at number four, Jose Zepeda, 35-2, 27 knockouts. So technically sound, just solid, a very solid fighter. He's been at the weight for a while now. His last fight was a KO1 over Josue Vargas. Remember that fight? That was brutal. In some brutal fights. We remember that 2020 fight of the year with Ivan Baranchins. Knocked down a billion times, but was able to land that devastating punch on Baranchins. So he has KO power. Don't let it fool you. Very soft-spoken guy. that he can crack. He's got wins over Branches, like I said, Pedraza, that close decision loss to Jose Ramirez. That could be his potential next opponent for that vacant WBC title if Josh Taylor vacates him. That's why we're doing this conversation. But I like Zepeda a lot. You know, very sound. Like I said, 31% of his landed punches are body shots. That's a good number when you get over 30%. Lands 42% of his power shots. Solid, solid, solid guy at number four. Number three, Regis Progre. 26-1 with 22 KOs. His last fight was all the way back in April when he beat Ivan Redcatch. And when I say beat, I don't know what the hell happened in that. I'm still trying to figure out the injury to Redcatch, and he was taken out on a stretcher. But, you know, the thing with Regis Progre, it's like, what is going on with his career? You know, fought Josh Taylor in that very, very close, the final of the World Boxing Super Series in 2019. He's only had two fights since then. None of them were at 140 either. Catchweight king, Regis Progre. One of his fights was at like 142 pounds. The other one was at like 143. That's the bad news. The good news is he's fighting next week. It's also another good news, bad news situation. He's fighting next week against Tyrone McKenna, and it's at 140. But we want to see Regis Progre in tougher fights than Tyrone McKenna. No disrespect to McKenna, but this is a guy that is could be a top guy, Regis Progre. So start fighting top guys. He's not in the spring chicken anymore either. Regis Progre is like 32 or 33 years old. And I love that he's getting paid. Like, he got paid handsomely for the Redcatch fight, over $1 million for that one. And he's probably getting a really good amount to fight in Dubai on ProBellum against Tyrone McKenna. That's great, because Regis Progre did not have the same come up as some of these prospects. He had a fight in Claw as part of the Bella Entertainment roster, you know, to get into a position to win a title at 140, to get in position to get into the World Boxing Super Series. So now he's cashing out, but come on, man, get in there with some of these big names. It's ripe for the taking if you could still make the weight. He's flirted with 147 in the past, but if he can get boiled down to 140, you know, he can get a title shot really quick. Coming in at number two, Jose Ramirez. I have him at number two based off of the fact that he's been in the division. He's a former unified champion. He's fought some big names. He just fought this past weekend, picked up the 27th win of his career. It's just like a mixed bag when it comes to Jose Ramirez. Coming up the ranks, he was like, wow, this guy's a can't miss, former Olympian, you know, aggressive Mexican fighter. But over the last couple of performances, you know, the Josh Taylor performance, obviously the first loss of his career, but close decisions over Zepeda, where a lot of people thought that Zepeda won, that Orozco fight. A lot of people thought Orozco won. You know, the thing with Jose Ramirez is I feel like in his biggest fights, he doesn't always, you know, shine the brightest. It comes up a little short, leaves something to be desired. And I thought that was the case with Pedraza. You know, he didn't hurt Pedraza once in that fight. Pedraza's crafty, I'll give him that. But, you know, I want to see more out of Jose Ramirez. But I have him at number two, out of respect and the fact that he's been in this division for a while. And like I said, former unified champion. Number one, drum roll, please. This is going to be controversial, but my logic is if you beat the man who had all the belts, you are now the man. That's Jack Catterall, number one. I believe he beat Josh Taylor. So if, say, he did get the official win, Catterall, then he would be number one. I mean, that's just how it works. And if someone chirped me on Twitter last night, well, would you have Kambosos number one at 135? I understand the logic there, but I wouldn't have Kambosos number one at 135, even though he has majority of the belts, because 135 is loaded with raw talent. 140 is not loaded with raw talent. There are solid fighters, but none are pound for pound levels. Maybe Teofimo if he gets back in the win column. That's why I have Jack Catterall number one. He beat the man who beat the man. His last fight, like I said, was with Josh Taylor, and I thought he won. He's very economical, Taylor. He's got a great 1-2. Some people would say basic. I say, you know, he's using his bread and butter. Throws just 44 punches around. But let's look at this. 45% of his landed punches are to the body. He hurt Taylor a bunch to the body. That's a really, really high number. He lands 40% of his power, and that's mostly because he's very economical. So there is my top eight. Barboza at eight. Gary Antoine Russell at seven. Sabriel Matias at six. Teofimo Lopez at five. Jose Zepeda at four, Regis Progre at three, Jose Ramirez at two, Jack Catterall coming in at number one. So now it's time for the mythical Inside Boxing Live tournament at 140 pounds. Your number one seed, Jack Catterall, going up against the number eight seed, Arnold Barboza. And with this one, I got Catterall winning. He wins a unanimous decision over Barboza. He's able to figure him out early. Barboza bamboozles him with his 80 punches around. Catterall finds a way to win. Let's go to our second matchup here, the 4-5 seed. It's Jose Cepeda versus Teofimo Lopez in this mythical matchup. And wow, this is a shootout. Love this fight. Imagine this one, Cepeda versus Teofimo. Teofimo's first fight at 140 as the 5 seed in this mythical tournament. He beats Cepeda in a close split decision. His first fight at 140, split decision. Cepeda rocks him with a few shots early. Teofimo shakes him off to get the decision win. Controversial, but everything in Teofimo's life at this moment is controversial. Now let's go to the 3-6 matchup. Regis Progre and Sabriel Matias. Talk about a shootout. Wow. Progre, powerful. Matias, powerful. I got Regis Progre knocking out and stopping Matias late. Matias is going to have his moments. He's going to be able to land shots on Progre early. He's going to throw a lot of punches. He's going to overwhelm Progre. But Progre is a cagey vet. He's going to bring the fight inside. He's going to land a body shot to hurt Matias. And then he's going to stop him in the later rounds to pick up a win and move on to the next round. Our 2-7 matchup, Jose Ramirez versus Gary Antoine Russell. This is now March. We're in March. March Madness is right around the corner. Upset city here. The young gun, Gary Antoine Russell, upsets Jose Ramirez, the 2 seed, to move on. He beats him in a decisive fashion. Goes to the scorecards, and Gary Antoine Russell wins a unanimous decision in the first round. That leads to our semifinal. So we got the number 1 seed, Jack Catterall, going up against Teofimo Lopez. Man, I'm getting excited because I wish we had tournaments like this. But Jack Catterall gets upset by Teofimo. If Teofimo's right, now let's just, in this mythical fake world we're living in this tournament, Teofimo has a win now at 140 over Cepeda. Got his confidence. He's back in a train in the proper training schedule. He's got his mind right. So therefore, he beats Jack Catterall, and I think he stops Jack Catterall. So Teofimo Lopez moves on to the finals. Our other semifinal matchup is the 3-7 matchup. Regis Progre versus Gary Antoine Russell. And I love Gary Antoine Russell. I think he's going to be a champion at 140. I think he could be a pound-for-pound type of fighter. But Regis has too much firepower, too much smarts. We saw a little bit of that, that Gary Russell isn't exactly 100% ready in that post-style fight. But you know, Progre has a lot more in the tank than Postyle, has a lot more power, a little more elusiveness. And I think Progre beats Gary Antoine Russell in a close fight to move on to the finals. Okay, here are our finals, folks. Teofimo Lopez, the 5 seed. He now has 2 fights under his belt at 140. He's feeling real good. He's back to the takeover. He's talking trash. I mean, he talks trash even when he loses, but he's talking trash, and he's going up against Regis Progre. This is outstanding for the finals. You know, I've been around both these guys too. I've hung out with both these guys, and they kind of size each other up. They make jokes. They say one day we're going to see each other, and now they're seeing each other in this mythical tournament and the finals of this 140-pound tournament. Teofimo versus Regis Progre, a technical fight. You know, both guys, like I said, under 50 punches thrown around. Explosive, though. You know, both guys land big shots early on. You know, ebbs and flows. A classic going down. I'm going to say it's going down on MSG, the New Yorker in me. Teofimo gets a decision. Both guys hit the canvas throughout the fight. But Teofimo gets up and is able to get the hand raised at the end. Teofimo Lopez is the champion of this mythical fake tournament at 140 pounds. I know it's going to be met with criticism, but there were a lot of ifs here with Teofimo Lopez. I think we can all agree that he has supreme talent. I think we can all agree that he's going to be a world champion again. A lot of ifs. If it goes right. You know, if he can get his mind right, which is not easy. It's a hard thing these days. Tough, very tough in this boxing world. You know, one day you're on top, next day you're down low. One day you're the man, at the guy at 135, you got, you know, sponsorships with you know, Bud Light and you get Nike, this, that, and the other. Next day you lose and everyone's clowning you. But I think if he gets his mind right, Teofimo, he's got the most skills at 140. And that's the beauty of this division, is we're going to see a lot shake out. If Taylor leaves, which I think he's going to do, and Teofimo enters the fray, let's say maybe even Devin Haney enters the fray. I mean, there's circling right now in the water, everyone. the promoters, the organizations trying to figure out who's going to be the next couple champions at 140 pounds. But that's my fun little tournament there. If you disagree, you agree, bring it at me. But here she is. Here she is. Here she is. Claudia Trejos. Okay, it's time to bring in our guest this week here on Inside Boxing Live, a friend of mine, a friend of yours, if you're a boxing fan, Claudia Trejos. So Claudia, hold on. Before we get you in, I'm going to read off your accolades because they are so impressive to me. And if you don't know, now you do know. Among the first women to cover a sporting event in Saudi Arabia, the first Hispanic woman to do commentary on an NBA broadcast, and the first woman to cover Olympic boxing this past week, International Women's Day. That's not enough for me. I need International Women's career for Claudia Trejos, a trailblazer, a great person, a fight freak, and here with us on Inside Boxing Live. How was that for an intro?
Oh, my goodness. I'm having a hard time with that because when I hear that and then I add the amount of years.
Yeah.
So would it be fair to say I am the first because I've been around for so long? I am the first because I have so many flying hours. I've been the first because somebody had to do it, not just because I mean, you're only good, as good as your last show. So right. I'm fortunate enough to love what I do. So I get to put my heart and my soul. So how can it go wrong?
That's great. I mean, someone has to do it first. You're right. You're a trailblazer, you know. To do those things, to be in Saudi Arabia as a woman covering a fight must have been tough. Just being a woman in boxing, I know, was hard. Maybe not so much now. There's still so much more progress to be made, but I'm sure it wasn't easy, you know, late 80s, early 90s, where it's not the same world we're in today.
Yes, absolutely. It was rough. So my growth into boxing was almost natural, I would say, because I come from behind the scenes. So the fighters knew me from way back in the day when we used to do Wednesday night fights at the Forum. Mm-hmm. And it's rained a couple of times. We didn't have your dad on hand giving us the stats. So it was we were MSUing a lot at the time, you know, trying to keep track of who did what and who was being more effective without real stats. And I was an AP at the time, and I was an assistant producer, and I was a grip. And so I was the one that nobody really saw or heard of, but I was like behind the scenes running from one corner to the other.
I didn't know
trying
that.
To figure out, oh yeah, back in the day. So when one thing led to another and I became, you know, a host and a commentator in Spanish and English, it was like, but I thought you were here all the time. What? I don't know.
What's the best way to do it, right? I mean, you got to work your way up. I mean, I did the same thing. You know, you start, a lot of broadcasters, they start behind the scenes. They do anything and everything. So you being a grip, you doing running around, because I'm sure you had aspirations to be on air, right?
At all.
You did or didn't?
No, never.
Wow.
So, since I was 16 years old, well, actually earlier, I wanted to be a doctor, and I actually got my associate's in pure and applied science, and I went to LA. Wow. Pursuing my medical career. And things in life happened, and then I was already working on TV, but it was my job was never a job, if that makes sense. It was playtime for me. I would get off of school and I would have like a part-time job, and I would, like, you know, get whatever I had to do done. Mm-hmm. So I could make it to the ballpark, so I could make it to the ice rink, so I could make it to the basketball court, so I could make it to the fights. Yeah. Because I was just assisting, and I was a fan. I was literally a fan that was getting paid a couple of bucks an hour to either set up pedestals, do the white balance, you know, connect cameras. And then striking was the bomb, because that's the quiet time in sports. Yeah. And that's when all the players are leaving and you're wrapping up. And that's when you get the rants and you suck tonight. And what the hell happened to you? You know, and it was a gift. It was a little gift from God to me. And then one thing led to another, and I was never, ever pursuing a career on camera or on TV, period. Wow. It was.
And you're again, so good at it. You're like a natural.
Because I love what I do. Now, if you have me talking about, like, there were times that I had to replace a newscast and the newscaster, the anchor.
Oh, no. Real stuff? We don't do real. Yeah,
like we don't real do real. We don't do. And it's funny because I don't read prompters. You know this. We've done this together. So I don't read prompter. And news is all about the prompter because everything is timed, and you got to throw to an SOT, and then you got to. And it was like, dude, really? I know the news. All I have to do is, you know, I'm all about engaging and making it conversational.
News, I would love to see you do the news like today, and you're sitting there and you're like, look at these gas prices. Can you believe this stuff? That would be like the most real newscast ever, where you're like looking into the camera, like forget the prompter, like I guess I'm not driving this week or stuff like that. Like I can see you just like being very real on a news telecast.
That, and I think sports allow us to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. News, I understand you got to be very objective and neutral and yada, yada, yada. That's definitely not me. I'm very opinionated. You know this.
Mm-hmm. Embrace debate.
Yes. Well, but that also engages. I mean, and I don't mean to be rude. I don't think I've ever been rude, but I've been clear and concise as to where I stand in certain points. And I think our platform allows us to discuss very simple things, sports, who wins, who loses, how did they win? And it just fun. It's
especially
fun.
Boxing too. I mean, it's just so much, everything is a debate. Everything next guy thinks or next woman thinks they know more than the next person. It just, there's so much debating in there. But how about, you know, someone had to be first, like you said, you know, there mm-hmm. were others at the time as well, but you know, looking, I wouldn't say down, but just looking around and seeing all the women that are in boxing, whether it's, you know, Christina Poncher, you know, whether it's Michelle Joy Phelps, you know, whether I don't want to forget any, but whether, you know, all the women are around there today, you know, I'm sure you're very proud. And how about your message to them?
Well, first, I am extremely proud because they're taking a chance and they're having faith on themselves. And it's not easy to take that step and say, I'm going to walk away from whatever it was that they were trying to do or whatever they thought they were supposed to do and taking a chance, because I understand most of them did not have the support from either their peers or the family members. So I'm glad that they're still here. The, you know, Cynthia Conti's, Michelle, they're all, and their moms and their sisters, and they have completely different functions at home. And they still make the time to come and do podcasts and cover the fights. And it means sacrificing other things like family life, like, you know, your regular life. We don't have a regular life. We're on the plane or in an arena. So I'm very proud. I'm proud because they took a stand. And my message is trust yourself and allow time to just roll and don't take yourself so seriously. This is not serious. Life in general is not serious. We have serious circumstances, but you have to, you can't control circumstances. If they hate you, if they don't hate you, if they adore, if they adore you, if they criticize your opinion, it's just that. Mm-hmm. Don't take yourself so serious. Yeah. I mean, you cannot control the circumstances. You can control your mindset. Your mindset should always be trust you and be you and know that nobody else can replace you. Anybody can replace a reporter, but nobody else can be Claudia or can be Dan or can be, you know, just face the fact that you're an individual and that is what you need to portray.
Yeah. Great, great message there. And Corey Urban, our friend, put out a thread yesterday on Twitter where he was highlighting a lot of the women in boxing, not just on camera, you know, those behind the scenes, you know, those that, you know, Emily in boxing, she's a PR woman. She does a wonderful job. Or Sophia Zinger, who is a DAZN producer who I've known since
my HBO producer.
Yeah. So I've known her since the HBO days when she was doing graphics and doing stats, and to see her rise is great. So awesome stuff. Women belong in sports. Women belong in boxing. I know it's a male dominated sport, but let's be honest, women's boxing in terms of the fights are incredible. I mean, they're going to be even better this year too, but it's awesome stuff. And I salute you for all the great stuff that you've done over the years. And, you know, I know you're a big inspiration to a lot of women out there, not just in the boxing world, but just in sports in general. So let's get into what we saw this past weekend. You were there in San Diego, beautiful San Diego, hell of a fight town. We'll talk about that in a second. But Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez did it again. Claudia, he turned back the clock again. You know, there were some questions about whether he was going to get old overnight as a very old 34-year-old, just like myself. You know, I feel like that when I get out of bed sometimes. But Chocolatito throws 1,000 punches. He beats the younger, stronger, I would say, fighter, not smarter fighter in JC Martinez, but just an absolutely outstanding performance from Chocolatito. What were your takeaways from being ringside?
an outstanding evening of boxing across the board, from the prelims to our main card. I mean, we had a chance to see outstanding fighters. But moreover, the fact that we had a chance to see Chocolatito here in the States and having somebody como El Rey Martinez doing his debut in the U.S. was outstanding. And let's not forget that we've seen El Rey rise like foam, really. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because we had a chance to speak to Canelo right before the fight. And he said, don't expect a technical fight from somebody like El Rey. He's young. His very short career compared to somebody like El Chocolatito. He hasn't been exposed to fighters of the level of Chocolatito, but I'm going to tell you, that guy will just take it to the last bell. My colleague and I, Ricardo, we're looking at each other. We're thinking, you know, this is, if it goes, I mean, our analysis said, and based on your dad's very exact stats, if it gets past the six, it's all the way Chocolatito. Mm-hmm. But Martinez has to bring the fight to him and really look for that knockout before the six, because we had our doubts about his stamina. Wow, I can't even speak anymore.
That's a tough word. It is a hard word.
Stamina. Mm-hmm. The truth is, we were not let down. It was, I'd say the last two rounds could have gone either way. Mm-hmm. Ricardo, my colleague, my play-by-play, gave it to El Rey. I didn't give either one to El Rey, but it could have gone either way. But it was amazing how somebody as young as El Rey would try to neutralize the expertise and the schooling with power. A lot of effort to take punches and just be able to sit and throw a power punch.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I thought JC Martinez fought a really good fight, Claudia.
It
wasn't smart, but it was brave. No. It was brave.
Yes.
You know, on the second, I watched it again. Even when I was counting JC Martinez for CompuBox, and you know, I was looking and seeing, like, you know, he's first round, he came out, he landed a lot of flush shots. He did land a lot on Chocolatito. It just, he was good, but Chocolatito was just on another level. I mean, Roman Gonzalez is a Hall of Famer. It was man versus boy, but
literally,
yeah, it was man versus boy. Like JC Martinez, like Canelo told you, like he went in there and was like, I think his game plan was, I'm going to give him my best shot early on. And then there was no second. There was no plan B. It was
there was zero.
Hope for the best. And with Chocolatito, I mean, his defense has improved so much.
Immaculate.
In this latter, he does get hit a lot, but it has improved much. You know, he can, his punch resistance is amazing. He doesn't really cut and he doesn't really swell either. So, I mean, a lot of things have to go right, but you know, this version of Chocolatito, I tweeted this out and it's actually funny. I mean, his 1,706 punches were his lowest 12 round total since 2012, but his accuracy was through the roof. His power punch accuracy was 51%. So, you know, obviously 1,000 punches is rarefied air in boxing, but for Chocolatito, it's really not. It's kind of low. I mean, this guy 1,300, 1,400 on average. But for him to kind of adapt to a new style where maybe he doesn't throw, 100 punches around, maybe he lowers it, but he's more economical. It's kind of what Pacquiao did towards the end of his career to beat these younger guys, to, you know, reserve all, you know, your energy for late, because Chocolatito did throw a fight high 160 punches in the 12th round. That's a scary thought to me, because, you know, I think it showed on Saturday night that Chocolatito has some more left in him, whether he goes to 118, whether he stays at 115. If he fights like he did on Saturday night, a little more calculated, but still very smart, he can beat anybody at 115.
And just to add to those very precise stats, thank you, Mr. Canobio. Let's add to the fact that his stamina and what you mentioned about his capacity to just overcome, he got punched, but they seemed like nothing hurt. Yeah. He just kept going forward. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that he did mention was that he was going to use El Rey's effort to close the gap, so he didn't have to waste energy looking after, going after, mm-hmm. being on the search of his opponent. And that proved to be a very, very efficient fight plan, because like you said, by the 12th round, he was very consistent along the whole fight.
Very consistent. Stayed around.
Very consistent.
He was around 78 to 80 punches around, which for him is low because he averages 90 around. And I was like, wow, he's really dropped it down a little bit. But then it shot right up when he threw 160 in the 12th round to close it out. And you know, like just put an exclamation point, took over that fight in the hands down. Half. Yeah, and now everyone's looking to what's next. I mean, obviously, it's kind of funny. The Chocolatito, Roman Gonzalez, is probably the best Superfly weight, and he's not even doesn't have a belt. Juan Francisco Estrada has WBA. You know, Josh Franco has a belt. You got, Jesse Rodriguez has a belt. Josh Franco has a secondary belt in the WBA. This is all nonsense. Fernando Martinez, IBF champ, and then you got Ioka, WBO. These are all, and then Cirek Sorungbasai is waiting in the wings too. All great fights for Chocolatito. Who do you want to see him fight next?
Well, it doesn't matter what I say; it's what he wants. And I'm gonna fight next. I would like to see him fight Estrada again, because remember that fight in Dallas was a very questionable decision. Mm-hmm. It could have gone either way. Again, it was one of those close fights, high producing fighters. The fight, the pendulum kept swaying to both A and B. It was amazing. So if we got a chance to see another explosive fight, but I'm going to add this. Once the fight was done, he came down to speak to us and, you know, all the accolades and congratulations. And he says, now do you all keep asking me if I'm going to retire or when am I going to retire? I'm going to drop this. And he dropped the bomb right there. He says, two more fights and I'm done.
Wow.
Two more fights. I just need two more fights. I'm tired.
He's tired. I mean, he's turned pro at 18. At 21, he was a world champion. At 27, he was pound for pound number one. At 30, he was written off after that Rungvisai knockout. Had to build himself back up. A lot of wars. A lot of mileage on that odometer.
And just to put everything in context, there were not just physical wars. There are also mental wars. You got to remember that for the first fight against Rungvisai, his parent, his dad / trainer that had been with him since he was 16 or 14, or that parental figure died, and he had a hard time. He never went into solitude mode. He went straight to work mode without his corner. Then he brought in his dad for that second fight. He was not mentally or physically prepared for that fight. Mm-hmm. So yes, are you as good as your last fight? We usually say you are, but goes to show we could be wrong because he proved that he doesn't have two lungs. He has four lungs.
Yeah, he's nuts. He's
crazy.
He's just an all-time great. And I said after the fight, when I did a little video, it's like a guy, he's a throwback fighter that could have fought in any era, but we're so lucky that he's fighting in this era. So we get to watch it. But you know, there was a little bit of a rumor about fighting Inoue, which I think would be it's just too much. I mean, I would love to see it because I love these mega events. Like,
yes,
I would like it because like, it would be like a big Super Bowl. It would be a big event for Chocolatito. It would be a chance for him to get his highest payday, whether he, you know, it might not go his way because Inoue is legitimately a monster, pardon the pun, but you know, something like that where he can maybe against Donaire or something where he can.
I don't think Donaire at this point in time has much to show Chocolatito, not necessarily because of the punch stats, but experience, flying hours. And it's just what you saw on Saturday was textbook giving somebody a lesson, how to walk the ring generalship, sit behind a jab, combinations, flurries, holding back energy. Inoka, could be a very good fight, except, and I'm going to side with Chocolatito. He's going to be putting his legacy on the line. He already knows what it is to lose. So basically that's going to be another stripe in the tiger's fur. But I'm bringing a whole lot of experience and time and eyeballs. Yeah. I need to get paid.
Yeah, you need to get paid. I mean, I think everyone will agree with that. This guy, I don't know what his what he made for, probably close to $1 million for this last one. The guy deserves so much more. So I wouldn't fault him for looking for like a huge fight. But you know,
a big payday.
A big payday. I mean, payday. He deserves the payday, just like Canelo says. He deserves it. But I want to quickly talk about the fight atmosphere. This Friday night, we saw a fight in Fresno. That's the hometown of Jose Ramirez. The crowd was awesome. Saturday night, I wasn't lucky enough to be there like you were, but I was in San Diego this past summer for a DiBella Broadway Boxing that was sold out. And this is like low level club show. You could feel the energy in that building through the television into my living room. I want to see more fights in locations like this. Obviously, site fees are a big thing economically. You know, there's going to be fights in casinos in Vegas. I mean, they pay. They pay the freight, and that's very important. But every once in a while, come on, let's get a fight in a place like San Diego, a place like Fresno, a place, you know, outside of the box of a sterile casino environment. The atmosphere in San Diego, from what I saw, was just tremendous.
It was absolutely outstanding. And as you were doing the fight, we were watching you guys because we all huddled up in the lobby and it was around phones and iPads watching Jose Carlos Ramirez. Huge fan. Robert Garcia, huge fan. Mm-hmm. And it's electrifying. And I remember back in the day when we used to do boxing in Los Angeles that we would do Wednesday nights and we'd do Friday nights. You remember the time when we did Prime Ticket, then it later became Prime Sports. There were smaller venues and we could still smoke in arenas. So it was all smoke-filled environments.
You were smoking your cigars?
Yes, of course I was smoking my cigars. It was the era of burnt sugar, for God's sakes.
Oh, and
sugar.
Whiskey and cigars.
And I would always have a stick, a good stick to share.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's fantastic. But unfortunately, financially, it doesn't make sense for the big, big events.
No, I get that.
Now, because of the same exact reason. I mean, casinos actually help us with mm-hmm. selling of the tickets, promotion. It a lot carries on these big casinos. Let's not forget, MGM owns the whole strip. So when you promote a fight like a Canelo coming up against...
Bivol.
Oh my God, Dimitri Bivol. Mm-hmm. It's going to be all over the place. You know, Callum Smith, Billy Joe Saunders. And I understand. But I think everything has its place and its time. Mm-hmm. Very good point. El Rey Martinez was coming up in weight. He was facing a legend. So that on its own, the weight of the promotion is on El Chocolatito.
Yeah.
So you don't have two megastars. So that actually allows for a smaller venue.
Yeah.
But when you're having two megastars, in this case, and I'm going to go back to the Triple G era with Canelo, two fights, it was jam-packed. If we were to have a fight of that size,
you
the tickets would be...
Yeah.
We can't.
You're making great points. And obviously, a big fights. You know, the biggest fighters in the game fighting each other, those belong in Vegas. Those belong...
Yes.
I'm talking like, for instance, not the single
like
out.
Like what we saw this weekend.
Like that, or like not the single out Showtime, but, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, the card with Victor Postol, the card with when he fought Gary Antoine Russell. And why is the main event slipping from my mind? But anyway.
Because we have those brain farts. It's
yeah,
okay.
Because there's so many fights that they all blend into one. But that one where it was in Vegas, I know that the casino paid them to do it there. You know, it was Chris Colbert in the main event who got upset. But Chris Colbert's from the East Coast. He's from Newark. Gary Russell's from Maryland. Like, that fight belonged on the East Coast. That fight belonged somewhere in the middle between those two fan bases.
I could see that in Rhode Island. I could see that in Boston. I could see that even in the Hulu Center.
Exactly. But the thing is that they put it in Vegas, and I get it. Like, I understand why they do it, because that's how it's economically, it makes sense. But, you know, this is, you know, semantics, small stuff, like, but you can see the difference. Saturday night felt in San Diego, felt like alive. It felt amazing. You know, Canelo in attendance, a lot of big names there, you know, just
everybody was there. I mean, all the ladies were there.
Chloe Trios was there.
I was there, but you know what? Something that blew my mind, talking about regions, San Diego usually hosts Mexican fighters for obvious reasons. It's across mm-hmm. the border. You bring, you know, the Jaime Munguias of the world and the Eric El Terrible Morales of the world. It's right across the border. Dan, I kid you not, the minute that the pendulum started swaying towards Chocolatito, sixth, seventh round, it was Nicaragua alive in that pachanga arena.
That's awesome.
It was like Chocolatito, and they would call Nicaragua, and there were flags all over the place. I was impressed, because usually it's Mexico and that's
it. Sure. That's what I was worried about. That's what I'm worried about with Chocolatito. It's like, obviously American fans are starting to, over the last couple of years, figure it out and appreciate him. Nicaragua is such a small country. It doesn't have like the Mexican fan base behind him, or a Puerto Rican fan base behind him, or some of the other Latino countries behind him. It's like, I want him to get like a huge ovation, but he did, like you're saying, he did.
Yes, he did. And it was fantastic. And let's not forget that he carried on the legacy of somebody like Alexis Arguello, which is not easy to be said or even talk about it right now. But Alexis Arguello left such a very strong footprint in what boxing is supposed to look like and what fighters from Nicaragua can bring to the table. And he created a transition that's actually what created the Chocolatito, who was trained originally by Alexis Arguello.
So cool.
It's
never
so
doesn't
cool
celebrate, doesn't celebrate after a win. I went back and watched that knockout of Kalia Fai.
No, he doesn't.
didn't like his first thing, he ran over to Yafai and like kind of like lifted him up and held him. You know, yes. Aguero was the same way.
Yes.
That's an epic. I mean, and it's so cool. And I'm glad, I'm so happy that, you know, that Roma Gonzalez is getting like the recognition that he deserves. He's up there, man. He's up there with the Pacquiao's, the Mayweather's, Andre Ward's, you know, Tyson Fury's of the best of this generation, you know, this era.
And now I'm going to ask you, and how many pound for pound lists have you seen them lately?
Well, I tweeted, that's funny you asked. I tweeted that out. I hate pound for pound lists. I like to look at them. I don't like to make them. I just think there's just too subjective. I don't even know what the criteria is anymore.
It's about the time. I do my own.
Right. I tweeted out. I don't do pound for pound lists, but if I did, Chocolatito would be in it. And yours better have them in there too. Because he belongs in it. I mean, I thought he beat Estrada. I thought he beat Rungvisai that first time. Maybe there isn't a rematch. Obviously, he lost the second one, but who knows if they even have a rematch. He could arguably be undefeated right now.
Yes, yes. I mean, but then again, we cannot control circumstances. We can only control mindset. And the mindset in somebody like Chocolatito is another loss doesn't make me or break you. Because up until he faced somebody like Rungvisai and there was that doubt in the first fight, mm-hmm. and he lost in a decisive way by Rungvisai in the second fight, yeah. very, very clear win. He was unbeatable and nobody wanted to fight with him. Well, I don't know true. If you remember this. Yeah. He had a hard time finding opponents. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, because that's the way we look at fighters. We only look at the last fight and see, okay, where does he go? For example, in the pound for pound list, but also on opponents, because he went through so many opponents in such a quick way and mastering them. So it was like, we have nobody to really have him compete with.
Right.
Do you remember Gennady Golovkin until he fought Daniel Jacobs?
Right.
He had a hard time finding an opponent. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until Danny exposed certain, you know, defense issues
yeah.
that Canelo said, oh, okay, I'll find him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's part of the, you know, the price of being one of the top dogs is you become the boogeyman or you become, but HBO, I mean, you know, Peter Nelson gets a lot of flack for being the guy that took HBO off the air, but he was also the guy that put Roman Gonzalez and the Superfly
yes.
on the air. So, you know, I know he's a name that boxing fans do not like, but you have to appreciate the fact that, Chocolatito was able to, you know, get a platform around 2015-ish, 2016, fighting mm-hmm. underneath Triple G. Those are some electric fight nights. Claudia, I love talking boxing with you. I want to keep bringing you on this show because
anytime.
You are experienced and you know your stuff and it's great. Appreciate you coming on and hopefully we can call a fight again soon. We can hang out, smoke some
yes.
cigars, drink some whiskey, not on the air, maybe on the air. Who knows?
Maybe on the air. Is. I don't know.
We got to start like you said at the beginning of this. Let's lighten it up. This is sports. Like let me wear a you know a hoodie and let me smoke a cigar on the air.
Can I take that in writing? Can you put that in writing? I'm going to take that contract. To the higher ups.
My next contract will have that.
Awesome.
Thank you, Claudia. Thank you
for inviting me. It's such a pleasure.
See you next time.